The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. All right, listen, I gotta go, but call me later.
No. I'm not calling you.
Not you, sweetie. Okay. All right, you too. Bye.
Are you ready?
Yes, and thank you so much for joining me, Mr. President. I hope you have been enjoying the holiday season so far.
I will tell you, I'm extremely upbeat. The White House is running like a...
defenseless young child being tear gassed at the Mexican border?
Well-oiled machine.
Uh-huh. Oh, mine was just an expression.
It's doing really well. I have great people.
Speaking of criminals, this is a very big week for the Russia investigation. Memos about Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, and Paul Manafort, three high-profile defendants, are scheduled to be filed by special counsel Robert Mueller.
It's a scam. There was no collusion whatsoever. And the whole thing is a scam.
Really? Because word on the street is that you're getting pretty scared. Well, when anything bothers me or my entire family is about to be charged with treason, I try to think of nice things. I mean, there are so many things that make you happy.
And there are certain things that I don't like.
Oh, let me think. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Destroying the First Amendment. White nationalists. Mm. Big fake tits.
Is that enough?
Brutal dictators and cold-hearted liars.
Tyrants and traitors and climate deniers. $5 spray tans with under-eye rings. These are a few of your favorite things. Burying tax returns after you file them. Tear-gassing migrants for seeking asylum. Big fat ass buckets of fried chicken wings. These are a few of your favorite things.
I did nothing wrong.
Blue collar workers all backwards and beefy. Giant hamburgers with extra kofifi. Siding with Saudi Arabian kings. These are a few of your favorite things. When your friends flip. When your day sucks and your hair looks bad like right now, just blame all the victims and praise all the schmucks, and then you won't feel so sad.
How long has this witch hunt gone on? It's gone on for what?
KGB play dates and absolute power. Porn stars and playmates who charge by the hour. Puppets at Fox News who dance on his strings. These are a few of his favorite things.
I did nothing wrong.
Long-winded tweets with no spell check corrections. Raking up forests and stealing elections. Facts that he fakes and fake bone spurs and slings. These are a few of his favorite things.
There was no collusion whatsoever.
Firing staff who won't come to his defense. Signatures on non-disclosure agreements. Lock her up! Chants like his bass only sings. These are a few of his favorite things. When the Dems fight, when your friends lie, and when Mueller's close. Just take a cold shower and have a good cry, and then you won't feel so gross.
The news about me is largely phony.
Judges who fly into partisan rages, solar eclipses and children in cages, hookers who pee on your face till it stings. These are a few of his favorite things.
fake news.
Red MAGA hats that you had made in Taiwan, smelling that new wife smell after you buy one. Lawyers who hide extramarital flings. These are a few of his favorite things.
I think I'm doing a great job.
People who cheer at your anger and meanness, dreams about having a normal-sized penis. Hannity's voice on your phone when it rings. These are a few of your favorite things. When your life sucks, or for God's sake,
girl,
when you're about to snap.
Take comfort in knowing at least you still make
the rest of us feel like crap.
Oh, yes. Whoops. Gotta fix that. Randy Rainbow, everybody. And yes, we did go and see Randy Rainbow on Saturday night. We almost didn't go because, you know, right now it was, wasn't sure we should put out the money because we're you know, having a rough time these days. And we had a party to go to. And so I dejectedly agreed, all right, let's go to the party. They're friends. They've done a lot for us. We should show up. And we got to the party, and it was loud and noisy and crowded. And after about 20 minutes or so, David looked at me. He said, you want to see if we can still catch the show? I said, yes. And we bolted and went to the Parker Playhouse in Fort Lauderdale and saw Randy Rainbow. And I got the Friday night show was sold out. The Saturday night show, thankfully, there were still a few seats available because he is, I got to tell you something, he's just funny. He's a guy that is so talented. And something that I learned while, you know, trying to decide whether or not to go to the show, I was looking for reviews of the show, but it's still a fairly new thing. So there really haven't been any written reviews that I can find anywhere on the interwebs. But I did learn that, first of all, Randy Rainbow is his real name. Yes, given name. And he's from here in South Florida. He grew up in Plantation, which is, you know, 10, 15 minutes from here. And so this was a homecoming of sorts for him. And he doesn't have like this wide repertoire. I mean, he's got a million of those videos, which you can find by going to his YouTube page. Just search for Randy Rainbow and you'll find them. And so that's what he did. He had a full band with him. He interacted with the videos. And I got to tell you, I was so impressed. The thing that impressed me most is he does everything himself. Now, I know you know that I do everything myself here, but my presentation isn't nearly as smooth as his is. The fact that he edits those videos, and I've done my share of video editing, and I can't do the kind of stuff he does. He's very talented. He writes it all himself. He records it all. He edits it all and puts it out there. And I'm so impressed with him. You know, there were some slow moments. He actually opens it up and takes questions from the audience, and it wasn't a very long show. But I got to tell you, I haven't laughed like that in a long time. And I thought, okay, he's embarking on this tour. It's really just started. Since he does everything himself, there's no way he's going to have any new videos out anytime soon. And sure enough, today I'm playing online looking for a comedy bit to open the show with, and I find this new Randy Rainbow video released today, December 5th, 2018. And it was that one, a song that he didn't do on Saturday night. And so I got to, this guy is prolific. And someone, Jassy718 in the chat room says, why doesn't he have his own late night show yet? I don't know. But if you get the chance to see him, go, because it's a wonderfully fun night of, and it's smart fun. It's not, you know, it is silly, yes, but it's also smart. So yeah, that's my two cents. My full-throated, whatever that means, review of the show was go. If you can go, because it's, you know, it's a night of unbridled laughter, which is what we all need right now. Now, I don't know if you watched any of the George H.W. Bush funeral today, but, you know, I was trying to go back to sleep after Jackson woke me up at 6 this morning. And sure enough, you couldn't escape it. And I got to say, I did happen to see the moment live when Donald and Melania Trump walked into the cathedral, and they took their places in the front row, you know, the president's row, where you had all the way from right to left. You had Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, right? Then you had the Clintons. Then you had the Obamas. And then there were two seats on the aisle for Dump and his mail order bride. And, you know, they were all, before the Dumps got there, the rest of them were all, you know, good naturedly laughing and talking and having a good time. And then Dumps show up. And oh my God, you would have thought You would have thought somebody died. Go figure. He had the most dour look on his face throughout the entire thing. And then there was one part. Again, I'm the non-practicing Jew here. I haven't been to many Christian funerals. But apparently there's a part where that everyone is supposed to read from the prayer book that they've given out. It wasn't even the one that, you know, is in the back seat, back of the pew chairs, the prayer book. It looked like it was, you know, specifically done for this ceremony. And all the rest of them, except for the dumps, are reading the thing. And I'm such a, you know, when it comes to religion, I'm not any good at this. I'm looking to see if I can find it, because there were a whole bunch of tweets on the subject. No, I can't find it. It's some usual funereal prayer that everybody, the apostle death prayer or something like that, and they all read it. They were all, you look at the row and you see Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Barack and Michelle Obama, all with their booklets, and they're reading, and then you see the dumps. And neither one of them are even looking at the printed page, let alone pretending to read it, because we know Donald Trump can't read. So if that didn't disgust you enough, maybe you read the news out of Wisconsin today, where in a lame duck coup, which is the way Ari Berman put it at Mother Jones, the Wisconsin Republican Party stripped the Democrats of power and made it harder to vote. Yeah, I've got some info on that in today's What's News. And it goes from bad to worse. I mean, I don't know what more the Democrats can do. They won the election in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and North Carolina. And the crooked, sorry to use a dumps word, but it's the only thing I can think of at the moment, politicians, Republicans, can't understand that, you know, I guess elections have consequences. They think that it's only when they win. When they lose, they try to strip the incoming Democrats of their power. Looks like they did it in Wisconsin. I know what, let's just get to what's news. Shall we'll do it live. And then coming up today, my old friend Jason Leopold will be here. He's been breaking story after story over at BuzzFeed News. And last week when I forget who had it, was it the Washington Post or NBC News? One of them, you know, had a big breaking news story about Trump trying to get the Trump Tower Moscow deal done. And, you know, I said, wait a minute, Jason Leopold had that story 6 months ago. So I actually called him. This was on Thursday when that story broke, or I direct messaged him. It's easier to get him that way, and said, can you come on the show tomorrow to talk about how you broke the story first? Because I didn't even realize it was another part of it coming. He said, I'm swamped. I can't do tomorrow. And so we set it up for today, that Jason Leopold will join us. So we'll get the latest. The Apostles' Creed was the prayer. Thank you, Lisi D. Again, not being a person of religion, and especially not Christianity, I know nothing about that. So the Apostles' Creed is what they were all reading, except the dumps couldn't be bothered to look, you know, lower their eyes to the printed page. Ugh, those people make my skin crawl. Anyway, all right, so let's, we'll do what's news. Again, a lot has happened today, so we will do it live. Except I didn't put the right thing up there. Hold on. Bear with me for just a moment. I've got to get the What's News open here because I put the wrong thing up. All right. Now, without further ado.
I read the news today.
Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, all day long we were waiting and waiting because we knew that sometime before midnight, the office of the special counsel would release the Michael Flynn sentencing documents or memo. And finally, it was after 8 o'clock already. It was like 8:30 something when the news finally broke.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller is tonight recommending little or no prison time for former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who pleaded guilty 1 year ago to lying to the FBI to cover up his discussions with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. Just a few hours ago, the cryptic Mueller team filed a sentencing memo for Flynn in federal court here in Washington. The documents note that, quote, given the defendant's substantial assistance and other considerations, a sentence at the low end of the guideline range, including a sentence that does not impose a term of incarceration, is appropriate and warranted. An additional memo lays out how Flynn helped Mueller's investigation, but a lot of it is blacked out. And that in itself is telling. It does show that Flynn, quote, has assisted with several ongoing investigations. Uh-huh. Telling again, including an investigation concerning any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of mm-hmm. President Trump. And that he, quote, participated in 19 interviews with the feds and provided documents and communications.
Okay.
This filing notes that Flynn started working with the government not long after it first sought his cooperation.
Hmm.
We quote again, his early cooperation was particularly valuable because he was one of the few people with long-term and first-hand insight regarding events and issues under investigation by the SCO, the Special Counsel's Office. The Mueller team also notes the defendant's record of military and public service distinguish him from every other person who has been charged.
Huh.
However, senior government leaders should be held to the highest standards.
Yes, they should. But anyway, Mueller's office recommended no actual incarceration for Michael Flynn because he's been so much help to them. By the way, one rumor that I heard yesterday was that Flynn flipped on Pence. Yes, Pence. And Pence has now retained counsel. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it is what I heard from a usually fairly reliable source. So there's that. The other thing is that Mueller's office is expected to release the Paul Manafort sentencing documents this coming Friday. Stay tuned. CIA Director Gina Haspel yesterday briefed a small group of Republican senators on the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. After the meeting, both Lindsey Graham and Bob Corker said they were even more convinced that the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, was involved.
I have zero question
this is Corker.
Mind that the crown prince, MBS, ordered the killing, monitored the killing, knew exactly what was happening, planned it in advance. If he was in front of a jury, he would be convicted in 30 minutes, guilty.
Wow.
The question is, what do we do about that?
Good question.
So far, it's unfortunate, but I think they feel like this is something that's come and passed because the administration has spoken to it in a manner that really gives them immunity.
So that's Bob Corker, who is retiring. Remember, his Senate seat was filled by Republican by Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee. But Corker, you know what, could do a lot more to block the insanity that Dump has brought to Washington, and he's done nothing except speak up every once in a while. That's not enough. The other person who's speaking out is Dump's girlfriend, Miss Lindsey Graham.
There's not a smoking gun. There's a smoking saw. You have to be willfully blind not to come to the conclusion that this was orchestrated and organized by people in under the command of MBS, and that he was intricately involved in the demise of Mr. Khashoggi. Open source reports show that he had been focusing on Mr. Khashoggi for a very long time. It is zero chance, zero,
zero,
that this happened in such an organized fashion without the Crown Prince. As to Pompeo and Mattis, I have great respect for them.
Yeah, even though they lie.
I would imagine if they were Democratic in a Democratic administration, I would be all over them in the pocket of Saudi Arabia. But since I have such respect for them, I'm going to assume that they're being good soldiers.
Ugh.
And when they look at the analysis, they're being technical in their statement.
They're not being technical. They're parsing words to sing Donald Trump's song. That's all. The attorneys general of Maryland and the District of Columbia deserve a round of applause. Yesterday, they issued subpoenas formally demanding financial records from Donald Trump's businesses as part of their lawsuit alleging his dealings with foreign governments violate anti-corruption clauses of the U.S. Constitution. Among other documents, the attorneys general are seeking revenue statements and tax returns from the Trump Organization entities. So there's that. Stay tuned. Donald Trump's longtime political ally, Roger Stone, said he will invoke his Fifth Amendment protection as he declined to share documents and testimony with members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. This according to a letter posted yesterday by the committee's top Democrat, Senator Dianne Feinstein. So and that happened a day after Trump basically applauded Paul Manafort on Twitter for not flipping on him, sounding like a mob boss, and criticizing those who would take the Fifth. You know, he's done that many times in the past, a few occasions.
When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the Fifth so they're not prosecuted, when you have the man that set up the illegal server taking the Fifth,
yeah,
I think it's disgraceful.
Disgraceful.
Fifth Amendment. Bob. The mob takes the Fifth.
The mob
if
takes
innocent,
the Fifth.
Why are you taking the Fifth?
Exactly.
Amendment? Fifth Amendment. Horrible.
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 He pleaded the Fifth, and that was the end. We never heard about him again. This is like Watergate.
This is like Watergate.
Only it's worse.
Only it's worse. It is worse. And so Roger Stone says he'll take the Fifth, although you can't take the Fifth on documents. If they subpoena the documents, you have to turn them over. But he's just so full of himself, he doesn't get that. Anyway, he says he'll take the Fifth. He didn't actually take the Fifth yet because he wasn't on any witness stand, which is where you would take the Fifth. All right. The news is ongoing in a few states where the Republicans who had been in power were defeated by Democrats. Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio, and North Carolina. Yeah. Some of them are using the lame duck sessions to strip the incoming Democrats of power. In Wisconsin, the Republicans did it last night, or I should say early this morning. They passed their key power grab bill at 6:04 a.m. Central Time. By the way, the sun came up at 7:13, just in case you were wondering. John Nichols of The Nation, who lives in Wisconsin, has been covering it. I tried to get him on the show today. He's traveling. He'll be with us at the top of the show tomorrow to give us the latest. But to explain what's going on in these, especially these four states with such egregious power grabs, here's Ari Berman of Mother Jones magazine.
I'm Ari Berman, voting rights reporter for Mother Jones. We have breaking news out of Wisconsin, where the Republican legislature is passing a lame duck legislative coup that would take power away from the newly elected Democratic governor and attorney general and make it harder to vote. This is an outrageous attack on democracy, but Wisconsin isn't the only state where Republicans are undermining democracy in lame duck legislative sessions. It's happening in three other key swing states as well. In Michigan, they are also passing lame duck legislative measures to take power away from the newly elected Democratic governor and secretary of state and overturn ballot initiatives that would make it easier to register to vote and harder to gerrymander. In Ohio, they're trying to ban future initiatives from making the ballot.
Amazing.
And in North Carolina, which in 2016 started this legislative coup by taking power away from the Democratic governor, they are now trying to pass a new voter ID law and change election laws before Republicans lose a supermajority. So those are four key swing states: Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina that are all passing laws in the lame duck sessions to undermine democracy.
And that's Ari Berman of Mother Jones magazine. I did invite Ari back on the show to talk about all this that's going on. Unfortunately, he's swamped this week, as you would imagine. I mean, this is his wheelhouse here. So he begged our forgiveness. He can't join us this week. Maybe he can do it next week. But that's why I wanted to play that clip for you. There was an election yesterday, a remnant of the midterms, and sadly, the people of Georgia continue to vote against their own best interests. The Associated Press called the Georgia Secretary of State runoff race for the Republican, Brad Raffensperger. He beat the Democrat, John Barrow, 52-48%. Georgia had the chance to elect a Secretary of State who would reverse Brian Kemp's voter suppression policies. Instead, they elected another Brian Kemp. Come on, people. You got to go to the polls. You got to vote. In fact, I got an email from one of our listeners. I didn't ask him if I could read it, so I'm not going to say his name, but lives in Georgia. Actually, what he wrote this on his Facebook page, Georgia, duh. And he continued, one of our favorite internet talk show hosts, Nicole Sandler, calls her state Florida. I fear Georgia is trying to wrest the duh away from them. And here's what he wrote, and I feel for him. He says, apparently most of us couldn't find the time to vote over the 6 days that voting was available to us and don't care if their ability to vote is curtailed or votes accurately verified or that the fossil fuels industry controls the rates we pay on our utility bills. Where were the folks who voted for Stacey Abrams? I know I'm going to get flack for this, but it is plain as day. Did the non-white community decide that because the candidates are white, they saw no reason to bother to vote? I mean, just because the GOP has an industry in place to restrict the ability for those people to cast a vote, then I suppose it doesn't matter who becomes Secretary of State. For those of us who pay power and gas bills in Georgia, it must be okay if our rates continue to grow faster than inflation. And he finishes up by saying, citizenship in a democratic republic has one responsibility, electing those who will write our laws and establish the rules under which we live in the U.S. Not bothering to vote at every opportunity is a failure to carry out that responsibility. Not voting is worse than neglect. It is an assault on the U.S. Constitution and disrespectful of all the men and women who have sacrificed much, and in some cases all, for our right and ability to govern ourselves. Not casting a vote is a decision to allow others to make decisions for us. Many elected by default will claim that they have a mandate to do things in our names, even though less than 12% of eligible voters bothered to go cast a vote. The founders gave us a way to self-govern. It's up to us to keep them. And that's why I shared that note with you, because it was so articulate and perfectly stated the challenge we're up against. You got to vote. You got to vote. In other news, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell nearly 800 points yesterday as investors' doubts over the U.S.-China trade truce renewed anxieties about the pace of economic growth. This is from, according to the Wall Street Journal, this is how they put it. They also, in an opinion piece, wrote, perhaps markets know that tariffs are taxes on commerce, and when you tax something, you get less of it. Mr. T's unveiling also hit on the day after the yield curve on some treasuries began to invert, which can mean trouble. The economy is still strong enough to survive some uncertainty, but tariff man shouldn't go to war with the laws of economics. He'll lose. The New York Times' Maggie Haberman was on CNN's New Day this morning, and she attributed that big stock market dump to Trump's lying.
The stock market dropped nearly 800 points yesterday because the investors don't know what the heck happened at that dinner.
Right. They don't know what happened, and they don't know what the president is hoping to communicate, because he came out and he said all kinds of things that were at odds.
Were lies. Just say they were lies.
Suggesting. The president has a very long history of conflating a legal problem, a policy problem, with a PR problem. And so he is running out trying to spin this with different statements as if that is the only thing that has meaning. Markets like consistency. Markets do not like when things are all over the place. He is very fortunate that the markets are closed today, because I cannot imagine what that would be like again for another series of hours.
But I think this is so interesting, because we often hear President Trump say one thing and the next day say something else and nothing shakes the base. Mm-hmm. But the fact that investors said,
investors,
wait a second, we don't understand what came out of this G20. That was, there's an actual metric
that they
can measure their confusion.
Correct.
Now.
And an actual consequence, right? Mm-hmm. And we are used to Donald Trump living a fairly consequence-free existence. To your point, he has changed the rules in terms of what a president, at least for himself, whether we go back for future presidents is a different question. But he has shown no consequences to his actions. This is a real one, and the economy is going to impact his reelection. It just is.
I think it's more, to an extent, saying that we don't know what you're saying is that we don't believe
we don't trust what you're saying.
Because he lies!
That's another consequence of when you frequently say things that are not true. When you say two things that are diametrically opposed, sometimes in the same 60 seconds, it's not as if everybody is not paying attention. And for somebody who has tried to paint his own version of reality, reality is catching up with him.
Reality is catching up with him. We can only hope. Well, we won't know if the sell-off would continue today, because the stock market is closed today, as are most government offices and agencies, for a national day of mourning, as former President George H.W. Bush is laid to rest. Well, not really. He's now on his way back to Houston, where he'll be laid to rest tomorrow. But today he was memorialized at the National Cathedral in Washington. Some of the best commentary came on Fox, where Chris Wallace noted how the mood in that first row of former presidents soured when the dumps arrived.
Well, I have to say I was struck when President Trump and Melania Trump came to the front row that it was as if a chill had descended on that front row. You had seen a lot of kind of chatty talk between the Clintons and the Obamas, the Carters. But when Donald Trump sat down, the greeting that he was given by Barack Obama and Michelle Obama was about as cool
yes, it was.
As it could have been. It seemed like they exchanged hello, morning, and that was it. And at that point, they all stopped talking to each other. And obviously, yes, I agree with Ed, this is the greatness of America, but there also is a reality, and there are some ill feelings among some of the people in the front row. I have to say that where you usually have a president's club and even people that ran against and maybe one beat the other, that doesn't seem to have been extended to President Trump. when you see them sitting in that front row.
And I wonder why. They would have all been magnanimous if Trump had the tiniest shred of decency to his character. But he doesn't have any character. He's a piece of shit. Okay, that's a way to end what's news. All right, coming up in just a moment, Jason Leopold will take a quick time out so I can get my ducks in a row here, proverbially, and we'll talk to Jason Leopold next. Hey, if you're giving gifts for the holidays and you do any shopping at Amazon, I hope you'll use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. He is the senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News, and our government affectionately dubbed him a FOIA terrorist. I'm thrilled to welcome Jason Leopold back to the program. Are you there, Jace?
I'm here. How are you, Nicole?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. I know you've been busy lately.
Yes, I was going to say I'm keeping busy.
Yeah, you are. I guess you have Dump to thank for that, Donald Trump. It's an abbreviation.
Yeah.
It's like can't is cannot, you know, with an apostrophe. Right. So Dump
like
is Donald Trump. Yeah, so it works. It's just an abbreviation, and it accurately describes him. So you've been over at BuzzFeed. I got to say, so on Thursday when all hell broke loose, a big story about the Trump Tower in Moscow, and I'm reading it, I'm saying, wait a minute, Jason Leopold broke this story 6 months ago. So you did, and now the rest of the media is catching up to you?
Yeah, I mean, let me just, you know, say that when the news broke on Thursday with regard to Michael Cohen pleading guilty to charges of lying to Congress, and it was a guilty plea that came out of the special counsel's investigation, that was quite a surprise. I mean, I did not see that coming. And I would say that confidently that I don't think anyone else saw that coming either.
Right,
and so that
right.
underscores the level of secrecy within the special counsel's investigation, right?
Right.
Trying to, as much as we've been trying to, find out what's been happening and doing so from conversations, mostly with defense attorneys, it's still, this was still, you know, quite a surprise. So then looking at the criminal information and what was laid out there, was kind of blown away because Anthony Cormier, my colleague at BuzzFeed, who I'd reported the story with 6 months ago, quite a lengthy story, which was based heavily on text messages, emails, letters, architectural renderings, and some interviews, the documents that we obtained. It was remarkable because everything that was laid out in this criminal information really lined up with what we had reported
right,
at the time.
Right.
And so that was very interesting to see that.
It was nice seeing some of the talking heads on cable news saying how your work had been confirmed. You know, at least they gave you credit, which doesn't always happen in your industry.
It does not always happen, no. And obviously in this very competitive environment, particularly revolving around the investigation, it's we're all looking to sort of have a little bit of credit out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the New York Times. I don't work for the Washington Post. So obviously it's not the first place that that people would look at.
And, right.
Oh, they BuzzFeed did that story? that just sort of opened up another avenue, another look at this whole Trump Moscow project,
right.
Which was, you know, this failed an effort by the Trump organization to get this tower built, 100-story tower built in Moscow. And Anthony Cormier and I mean, we had some details that we did not report left that we you know, that we were planning to report. And so when this broke, that's when we sort of sprung into action and moved to report the next story, which we had been sitting on a little bit, but also doing some additional reporting on it. And that was a story about this promise that, or proposal that Michael Cohen made verbally to a Russian government official about giving Vladimir Putin the, you know, what they proposed would be a $50 million penthouse in Trump Tower.
Wow. As a way of enticing oligarchs to purchase apartments there, figuring that if Putin had an apartment there, they'd all want to be in the building.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's certainly what was said to us at the time. Mm-hmm. And Felix Sater, who was Michael, who was a business associate of Michael Cohen, they've known each other since they were in high school. And Felix Sater had worked on previous projects with it for the Trump organization. That was his thinking. What's really important to note here, and we did make it very clear in our earlier story back in, I think it was May or June,
yeah, May,
on the Trump Tower story, mm-hmm. that, you know, the obviously selling other units was something that they were clearly thinking about and reaping a windfall as well. But really what this was is also getting Vladimir Putin to sign off. And, you know, in the text messages and the emails and everything that we've obtained, one thing stands out over, you know, the course of nearly a year of negotiating this project was Felix Sater, Michael Cohen, back and forth to each other, talking about Putin, Putin, Putin. They over and over refer to the need to get Putin to sign off. We need Putin to sign, you know, to buy in on this. Here's a person who's close to Putin. You're going to meet Putin. So this was discussed quite a bit, and it went on and on and on. And so you look at now this proposal to give Vladimir Putin a $50 million penthouse. That, you know, on the one hand, there's you know, Felix Sater says it's a marketing ploy to entice other oligarchs to, you know, to purchase these units and within this tower. It also appears to be a way in which to get him to sign off on it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the conversation has since evolved into, you know, does that constitute a bribe? Could that be a violation under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act? That was not the, you know, we didn't look at that area for our story. But at this point, that's where it's sort of evolved to. And you know, and the thing about Trump Tower, this Trump Tower Moscow project, is that even in these text messages, Michael Cohen is and Felix Sater, when they're going back and forth about what the next step should be, Michael at one point lashes out at Felix, saying, "You're not going to make me look bad in front of Mr. T," how he refers to Donald Trump, when he asks me about it. So it became very clear in our reporting early on, and even more so now, that Donald Trump was in the know on this. I mean, he was very much well aware that this project was happening, that they were moving forward on it, that Michael Cohen was moving forward on it. So this is not something that he was kept in the dark about, and there were just a few meetings, which is how Michael Cohen characterized it.
Mm-hmm.
This was something where Donald Trump was well aware.
Right. And the thing is, Donald Trump had been claiming all along, "I have no dealings in Russia, I have no loans in Russia, I have no projects in Russia, nothing in Russia, I've got nothing to do with Russia," even though he had been trying to get into Moscow for years and years and years. So he had claimed he had nothing to do with Russia. And Michael Cohen had been working on this. Now, I guess the people thought that he had stopped the negotiations before he actually took off on his candidacy before the campaign took off.
Right.
But what you've discovered is that it's actually went on well into the summer until after some of the debates had been held. And in fact, in one of the text exchanges that you had between Michael Cohen and Felix Sater, Sater is talking to Cohen, I think, about coming to Moscow. And he said, you know, I can come now, but basically he was saying Donald Trump can go after the convention. Do I have that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's right. And we posted some of the text messages on our latest story that we obtained earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an exchange that happened in May. So Michael Cohen has long maintained and even testified to this, which is what ultimately he pleaded guilty to in terms of, you know, lying to Congress. He testified that his discussions about, you know, Trump Tower Moscow ended around January, that it just fell through, the deal never the letter of intent that was actually signed in October,
right?
It just sort of ended. Now, what's really interesting about some of these text
messages?
Wait,
the letter of intent was signed in October of 2016. 2015. Okay, there you go. All right.
2015.
And it went on through the summer of 2016. Okay.
Correct. So his discussions with Felix Sater, who was kind of in the shadows regarding this deal. Felix had a lot of contacts in Russia, a lot of he knew a lot of the right people. He had the connections to perhaps get this in front of Putin or banks to get the financing. So he was an important figure in all of this. But Michael Cohen made it very clear that it was his project. It was Michael mm-hmm. Cohen's project.
Right.
And that his communications with Felix Sater, went through January, the end of January. What happened afterwards, which is what we reported earlier in the year, their communications about Trump Tower Moscow then fell off the emails and text messages and went into an encrypted application called Dust.
Okay.
So they were communicating via this encrypted app called Dust, which would your messages would disappear within
like
a day.
Gotcha.
And so now putting this all together, it was very clear that Michael wanted to keep this. And when I say wanted to, I don't believe yet, based on some reporting, that it was just by his own volition to decide to do this. But he wanted to keep this very, very quiet because some of the debates were coming up and
uh-huh.
Trump was going to be answering questions about his praise of Vladimir Putin, ties to Russia, business dealings in Russia. So there was really no real paper trail at that point, particularly as it when it came time to testify before Congress.
Mm-hmm.
These communications fell off for at least 4 months. They picked up again in May of 2016, and that's the exchange you were referring to that we included in our story.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very important exchanges because at that point, they're communicating openly about trying to get Trump to Moscow to meet Putin and to discuss this project.
Wow. So Michael Cohen, have you ever interviewed Michael Cohen? Have you ever spoken to him?
I have, yes.
Ah, and was he forthcoming with you, or was this after he had turned on Trump, or I don't know how much you can say.
Yeah, I pretty much can't say. I can just say that I've interviewed Michael Cohen.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, Michael Flynn is back in the news. So yesterday, we had been waiting all day long for Mueller's Flynn sentencing memo, I guess, to get Mueller's recommendations on what kind of sentence Flynn should get. And he recommended no time served because he's been so helpful. Now, you had a piece at BuzzFeed in August that follows the money trail and implicates Flynn in a scheme involving this Republican activist named Peter Smith, who then went on to kill himself. But his efforts to pay hackers to get Hillary Clinton's emails to help, you know, defeat her and elect Donald Trump. So were you expecting, I guess we were all expecting this Michael Flynn sentencing memo to be released last night. Did you know that he was as valuable a witness as Mueller seems to imply that he was?
I mean, we got some indication that he was out of the spotlight. He certainly wasn't tweeting. He wasn't very vocal. I think he appeared at a couple of events. So there were indications that Michael Flynn really was helping the special counsel. But again, to the credit of the special counsel's office,
they don't leak.
Which, as you know, they don't leak. And we've all sort of been reading tea leaves and trying to get a little pieces of information here and there. It was quite remarkable seeing the sentencing memo and seeing in there that certainly, one, the recommendation was for at least zero jail time or the minimal amount of jail time. And the fact that Michael Flynn had been interviewed and met with the special counsel and even DOJ prosecutors 19 times.
Right.
You know, so that to me suggests obviously that he's providing them with quite a bit of information. In addition to that, it made very clear that it was not just about the investigation that is centered around collusion, but it also involves other investigations, including one that we don't know about that is separate.
Right,
that
they're
seems
saying
to be entirely separate.
Right, that they say is a criminal count, which what I've learned in terms, I had Elizabeth Holtzman on a couple of weeks ago, and I had some other people who wrote another book about impeaching Trump. And what I learned was, the high crimes and misdemeanors don't necessarily mean criminal offense. Somebody can be impeached, a president can be impeached without having committed a criminal offense. High crimes and misdemeanors aren't necessarily criminal offenses. I learned that. But I knew Mueller was in. I mean, what's his name? Flynn was involved, obviously, early on, and he lied. Now, he lied to ostensibly lied to Vice President Pence. Now today, I read, and I don't know how true this is. I forget who posted it. That Flynn implicated Pence, and that Pence has now retained an attorney.
Wow. Well, I have not seen that report, but I think what's very clear from that sentencing memo is that Michael Flynn started cooperating very, very early, perhaps immediately. And this wasn't, for example, when you see someone like Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi, some of these other figures who have surfaced and are caught up in this investigation and are kind of, you know, trying to figure out through their own attorneys how much information to provide, what, you know, whether or not to be cooperative. Michael Flynn was cooperative right out of the gate. Mm. So that obviously seems to be very helpful to his own case. I believe he'll still, obviously he pleaded guilty to a felony, so he'll still be a convicted felon, but it was very helpful to him. And one thing that the sentencing memo noted is that, you know, he's been very helpful with regard to the contacts between Russian government officials and the transition team.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was only the national security advisor for, you know, for 3 weeks, 24
right.
days.
Yeah.
So what he actually knows and what he has provided the special counsel with obviously precedes the inauguration for the most part. Perhaps that 1 month, between January and when he left was quite a critical month in terms of what he could provide. But as it relates to Vice President Pence, it's unclear exactly what he could have given the special counsel about that. And I certainly am not even going to, you know, try to read any of the tea leaves there, but
right.
It's very clear from that memo, even though it's heavily redacted, that he has been a source of quite a bit of information. And again, just having followed cases, criminal cases and cases involving special prosecutors, from what I read last night, it doesn't appear to me that this is an investigation that is actually ending anytime soon, just based on what was included in this sentencing memo. If anything, I think that there are going to be many more shoes to drop implicating senior figures of the administration and perhaps people who are involved in the campaign.
Wow. See, and there's nobody knows, because as you said, Jason Leopold, Mueller's office does not leak. So anything we know has come from other sources. And for, you know, the Fox people and Trump apologists who
right.
keep saying we have there's no evidence of anything. Well, we don't know what there's evidence of because they haven't released their findings
yeah.
yet. And they're not going to until
right.
the investigation is done.
Yeah, and you know, you can when you read some of these stories, understand, I mean, this is, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets here. We know that there are many, many people who are involved with the campaign, who had ties to the campaign, who are part of the administration, who have been called before the special counsel, in some cases have been called before a grand jury. We
mm-hmm.
know that.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is reporters, you want to find out but where perhaps the direction of an investigation is going, you speak to those defense attorneys, right? And the defense attorneys will tell you, here are the questions that were asked. And then you see news stories saying, you know, Special Counsel Mueller is interested in this, 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 and this. And understand that he in fact may very well be interested in it, but it doesn't tell a complete story and you don't get the full picture. Of exactly where they're going with that. So those
right.
are the sources that are largely, you know, that are largely discussing what's happening, you know, behind the scenes. Because certainly no one from Mueller's office is,
right.
but
right.
this is clearly, you know, an investigation that's going to continue. But one of the important things to note as well is that, yeah, you know, there have been many guilty pleas that have resulted or come as a result of the of this investigation. We're still waiting to see whether the investigation will include any evidence of collusion.
Right. And as they
and
keep
what the actual crimes are
right.
as it relates to, you know, the mandate. You know, that Mueller was given to investigate that.
Right. Now, they keep saying, we keep being told, collusion is not a crime, but conspiracy is. And maybe we should change the word that we're looking for is some kind of conspiracy to affect the elections. So there's Michael Flynn. That was a big story that blew up this week. Well, the other story that blew up this week was about Paul Manafort, who the deal with Mueller's office is off because Mueller's office has determined that Manafort was lying to them, that he was basically operating as a mole and feeding information back to Trump. Is that basically what happened? And so now Manafort, his sentencing memo will be released this coming Friday.
Yeah, his sentencing memo is expected Friday. I mean, again, I would, for your listeners, for you, you know, have low expectations about
right.
the level of detail that's included.
Sure, because
there.
We saw this one be so redacted.
And I think that they may... Yeah, and I think they may speak around exactly what he did not provide, but they will go into why they believe that he, you know, violated the terms of his, you know, of his agreement. And I don't even think that they'll go into whether or not he was feeding information, you know, to the Trump's lawyers. I believe there still is this joint defense agreement that's in place that
mm-hmm.
sort of allows. You know, this is what Michael Cohen, and even I believe Michael Flynn originally had as well, where all of the sort of main targets of this investigation, they agreed to share information with each other early on about what was happening, what was being asked, what does Congress want you to testify about, what do they want you to turn over in terms of records, what is the special counsel asking for, so everybody would kind of be on the same page and be a united front, more or less. And Michael Flynn kind of his attorneys terminated that joint defense agreement when it became clear he was cooperating. Michael Cohen as well, you know, no longer has that. It appears that Paul Manafort was still, you know, even after this plea, was still providing, whether it's him or his attorneys, obviously providing information to Donald Trump's lawyers about what was, you know, what he was being asked, what
mm-hmm.
To do, what he was being asked in terms of questions that he's being asked or what to provide. So it's always been very clear that at least Manafort speaking through his attorneys, at least early on, that he was really interested in fighting these charges. And it also became clear that he was holding out hope for a pardon.
Yeah.
Because unlike his partner, Rick Gates, who, again, immediately cut a deal with the special prosecutor and started providing, you know, cooperating, providing information, Manafort was not even on the fence. He was just very resistant to it. So whether he actually acted as a mole as a way to stifle or perhaps interfere with the investigation in hopes that eventually he would be given a pardon is, I guess we'll find that out.
Yes,
but,
right.
He seems to be in quite... quite a pickle here.
Yeah, and Trump's tweets over the last few days have, you know, some are saying it's obstruction of justice, that he's tweeting basically, excoriating people like Michael Flynn, who
right.
have flipped, and praising Paul Manafort for not flipping, and acting like, you know, I didn't coin this, but a mob boss. Somebody, this is how they talk in the mob, you know, this one didn't flip, so good for him. Where what a president should be saying is, I want everyone to testify to the complete truth and get the truth out there. I mean, that's what you would expect to hear, not him applauding someone for not flipping.
Yeah, I think you would expect to hear that from anyone else other than Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, you know, I follow this obviously as closely as you do, and nothing at this point surprises me. And I think that when it comes to someone like Donald Trump, the only difference between now is that he's president, right? So he's wearing a different hat. He's the president of the United States, and it's the president of the United States that is actually saying these things, and it's coming from the office of the president.
Yeah,
I mean, what's amazing, just on a quick side note, all of these tweets are being archived by the National Archives. You know,
oh
one day
God.
Everyone's going to be, you know, looking at this. But the fact is that this is still Donald Trump. This
mm-hmm.
is still that person who, you know, would make the same types of remarks as incendiary, explosive before. And it's just remarkable to see how desensitized some have become, particularly, you know, obviously members of Congress. I mean,
yes.
it's amazing to see how he has been able to essentially say whatever the heck he wants to say. And you kind of get a shrug of the shoulders
mm-hmm.
from our elected officials who are supposed to be a check on that power.
Right. And many would say that's why the Democrats did so well, at least in the House elections, is because the American people want to put a check on Donald Trump. So let me ask you this one last question,
right.
Jason Leopold, because we're getting close
yeah.
to the end here. So all along, and I don't do that much on the Russia story for what we discussed, for the fact that we don't know a whole lot, that anything we do have is sort of conjecture, that we don't have anything from Mueller's office, and we won't until they're done with the investigation.
Yeah.
But there are some people, certainly some Trump supporters, but many on the left who say, oh, this Russia stuff, it's all nonsense. It's all subterfuge. It's, you know, that's not the story. Does the events of the last week or so, or did you always believe that there is actually a there, that there was some conspiracy between at least some people in Trump's orbit and the Russians?
You know, in terms of conspiracy as a legal term,
yeah.
I mean, I will say that I was unsure. You know,
yeah.
For me as a reporter, I wanted to find the evidence about
right.
it. To simply just base, I mean, everyone is or the commenters are commenting based on what they're reading.
Right.
I could tell you just through my reporting what I've collected. And, you know, I say this confidently that my reporting stands out because it's based largely on documents that I've obtained.
Right.
To, you know, to back up what we're reporting is that there is something there. Whether it rises to the level of a crime,
mm-hmm.
That remains to be seen, because that is in someone else's wheelhouse, whether
right.
to, you know, bring about charges. But certainly, you know, I've seen lots and lots of evidence and reported it, of potential money laundering, potential payoffs, hacking. There is quite a bit there,
and, okay.
and reality is, you know, even with promising, you know, Vladimir Putin a $50 million penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, those emails contain, you know, dozens and dozens of references to Putin.
Hey, so, Jason, all right.
It's we're just going to have to be patient and kind of wait to see what unfolds.
And see what happens. Thank you so much, Jason Leopold. You're the best. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Nicole.
Take care. And for you, we'll be back tomorrow with Howie Klein. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.